Welcome everyone to UBS Global Research Pod Hub. Today I'm delighted to have Justin Forsythe, our European Payments Analyst, with me, Sambuddha Ray, Global Product Manager at UBS Investment Banking Research. Justin, thank you for your time today. So, payments revenues globally have proven to be remarkably resilient. I think it's currently somewhere close to $2.5 trillion, and it's a sector that is still growing at double-digit pace. But we want to be talking about Europe today, because that's a region that has lagged in adoption, and Justin has recently written some fantastic pieces of research on this topic. So let's go straight into it, Justin. What would you say are the key themes to watch in European payments and fintech?
Thank you so much, Sambuddha, and hello to everybody. Great to be here. So our number one key theme in payments and fintech in Europe is the adoption of software and payments, or the convergence of software and payments in Europe. Now, there's a couple of themes I'm going to mention as well. Cross-border payments is another key theme, something we're not going to touch on today, and also open banking and account-to-account payments. So maybe a shameless plug for a future podcast episode. I think we'll come on to a brief preview of what software and payments is, but to piggyback on the point that Sambuddha was alluding to, penetration levels are pretty low in Europe currently. We're sitting at about 24% of volumes flowing through software-led distribution channels. That compares to about 64% in the US. We estimate it's going to go up to about 35% in the next 5 years. That compares to 81% in the US. So there's a serious adoption lag. The implication is a greater than 12-year delta, effectively, right? If we take the 2016 levels of adoption of 45% we estimate in the US, right, our 2028 number is still below that. And so I would say there are reasons, I think, which we'll come on to as to why that is and why there's such fragmentation and why this has been slower in Europe. But fundamentally, we think many of the same elements exist in Europe that existed in the US 5 to 10 years ago. And it's just the phasing of the adoption curve that is slightly different, and maybe the path and maybe the end state that will be slightly different, but the direction is going to be the same.
Interesting. Now, for the benefit of the listeners, let's just take a step back, right? I mean, can you explain to us what is software-led payments?
Absolutely. And I understand why we need to define it, because it just sounds super vague. And you know, you might think that everything is payments, right? When I go up to my store and I go to pay with a card, is that not software? Like, in a way it is, right? But when we're talking about software-led, there's a couple aspects that we need to talk about, right? So aspect number one is we're really talking about SMB volumes only. Now, there's two reasons why that's the case. Reason number one is it's the majority of the revenue, even though it's only 25 to 30% of the volume, because yields are higher for small businesses. We're talking about 70% of the revenue in the industry in Europe, which is, for payment processing, around 16 billion. So about 70% of that is coming from small businesses. The real reason, though, is because enterprises, even if they are using software, oftentimes the purchasing process and the integration is not led by software. So as an example, if I am a enterprise food chain coffee store that has 500, 600, 700 locations across the UK and Europe, and I'm working with, as an example, Oracle, who does point of sale software. Well, in reality, if there was a payment provider relationship there, that enterprise merchant, they're going to buy the software from that, in that example, Oracle. And Oracle might say, hey, we work with a payment processor. Could be Adyen, Stripe, whoever it is, right? Well, in reality, that enterprise is going to want to integrate directly and negotiate directly with that payment processor. They're going to build their own bespoke custom tech stack. And so they might be taking 5 or 6 or 7 different payment processors and plugging them into their stack. And so for that reason, right, because the buying process is separate, the technological integration is separate for enterprises, we leave them out of our definition. We're talking about software-led. So when we then go on and start talking about actually fundamentally what is software-led, what do I mean by that? Technologically speaking, you might be used to, say, going to a bank if you were a small business, and you open up your business bank account. And As part of that, you know, you're getting onboarded, you're getting underwritten, you get then a merchant account, and then your banker will offer you perhaps a payment processing functionality as well. And with that will come a payment terminal. And that might be the one that you see with the multicolored pin pad that will sit on the shelf or the desk at the checkout. In reality, that's not always directly connected into the back-end software, accounting, ERP, inventory, front of house, back of house, kitchen, etc., management systems. And if that's not the case, that can add an immense amount of time and pressure to the owner of that business. And so, you know, fundamentally, it can be literally 5 up to 8 to 10 hours saved per month for an entrepreneur because they're having to do manual reconciliations using that old legacy brick on table that they got from their bank. And so buying something with software, purpose-built, embedded payments drastically reduces time spent for a merchant and simplifies their processes on a monthly basis. So for that reason, you know, and this is one of the things I think we'll come on to, this is just a drastically improved process for merchants when we're talking about you know, the embedded nature of software within payments. Right now, the majority of payments are flowing not through software in Europe, as I mentioned, right? The other channels, including bank, which I also just mentioned, are more predominant in terms of mix of that kind of 100%.
Very interesting. You made some very important points. So, but I'm going to actually pick on one earlier point that you had made regarding penetration.
Yep.
So you said that penetration of software-led payments is significantly lower in Europe compared to the US. Why is that?
It's a great question. And I think many smart people have debated this one over the years. And what I would say is, I think the obvious one is single market infrastructure of the US, right? I mean, you can fairly easily scale a category killer with a single language. Of course, that's nuanced, but a single language, single currency, and not drastic differences in culture, etc. Single regulator. So there's a lot of reasons why, you know, software players are able to scale much more rapidly across the US than they would across Europe. And so I think when we think about Europe, all of those things are true, right? And we've heard the legacy payment processors out there say this over and over again, is that bank-based is the de facto way to take payments in Europe because everybody has a relationship with their bank. There's an engagement play, right? We talked about the onboarding journey that typically happens as you set up a business. The bank is always involved in that. So I think also this hyper-localization, right? You have either regional or country-specific players and banks where, you know, they have that enriched or that consistent dialogue and interaction with their customers, the SMEs. I think that's where we start. For the software players and why we haven't seen that level of expansion across Europe, it really has a lot to do with some of those local regional nuances, right? And so if I think about some of the things that are different across borders, we're talking about sometimes languages, sometimes currencies, sometimes regulators. Sometimes there's different payment systems, and so you've got to integrate into or report into different systems. You've got different tax regulators. You've got different sometimes requirements for menus, and so some have different dietary requirements when you print on the bottom of the page. There's all these differences, and so I think people would de facto assume that, oh, well, SaaS, there's not really anything that's overly like regulated, quote unquote, that would prevent them from moving across borders rapidly, but there are mechanic hindrances. One example is something called fiscalization, where point of sale providers actually have to have reporting in some countries into the tax authority because they need to be able to reconcile the books and records of the restaurants and the small businesses that exist in that country. And so they literally have to build an integration into the tax authority for that purposes. This is a point of sale SaaS provider. I think the other one that's apparent, at least when you look at the restaurant vertical, is the dichotomy in size. Restaurants are much bigger in the US. We think 5 to 6 times larger. So that means from a software player perspective, the ROIs are much more different, right? So I've got to effectively board, assuming a like-for-like comparison, 6 more restaurants to get to the same level of recurring revenue that you would from one, which also means you need more sales reps. And either your sales reps then need to be 6 times more effective or you need to hire more sales reps. And so do the unit economics make sense? Now, I guess the next question is, well, Justin, why doesn't this, I'm doing your job for you a little bit, but why does this change, right? Like, it's this way now, why are we going to continue increasing in penetration, right? And I think there's, all of those things are true, right? But one, as the US gets saturated, people are going to be looking for incremental areas to expand and to put their solution. We've already started to see that, for instance, in Germany, you've seen a collection of foreign players start to converge. So I think that is one of the reasons why we believe we're not going to necessarily get to the same levels as the US. However, I genuinely believe that all of the things that I started to mention before, right, all of the benefits for maybe each of these different parties in a software-led transaction will lead there to be the efficiencies gained, the benefits throughout the ecosystem are still going to exist. And that isn't different between Europe and the US, right? There is still cards. There's still, you know, a very small preponderance of cash. So a lot of the dynamics are very similar.
Okay, interesting. So a lot of complexities, I guess, in Europe compared to the US. In remind us, like, you know, what is the current status quo right now? So is it changing? Is it evolving? Like, you know, how are you seeing it at the moment?
Yeah, well, I think to be very explicit, right, the majority of payments in, at least we'll talk about continental Europe, are going through banks. And so that is a predominant distribution channel. And it's been that way for a long time. I think now the penetration rates vary across the continent, right? And a lot of things innovation-wise go north to south. And so in the UK and Nordics, we're talking about much higher levels of penetration of software-led payments in comparison to Southern Europe, where there's still a decent, for instance, in Italy, a decent amount of cash being used in terms of modernization journey. Again, I mentioned it before, but for a slightly different reason, right? From a payment processor's perspective, like, they all formed out of banks, right? To handle and settle cash, to settle payment transactions and to handle settlement activities, you had to be bank or part of a bank or had to have a license. And then what happened was the EU created a regulation that branded certain players payment processors and created a payment processing license effectively. And so when you saw that happen, which was like, you know, early 2010s, you started to see a lot of these independent processors begin to form, and it enabled kind of these processing activities to break out of the banks. So you started to see that separation and the ability to focus on the technology rather than it being grouped into this larger bank organization, not really focused on innovating technology over time. So that's another reason, is that actually the caliber of the technology and the investment behind some of these independent spun out entities has increased as well over that time.
Interesting. That's actually quite kind of makes sense. Would you say that there are, I mean, you made this point earlier as well, that, you know, the entire ecosystem is in it, right? So in the sense that everyone is involved, I guess the question is, would you say there are, what are those incentives for players in the ecosystem for adoption? And I guess what we're trying to really get to is, like, what's in it for them?
I think it's the right question to ask, right? And that's one of the things that drives our view on where adoption goes over time in terms of volume penetration, revenue penetration. So we kind of split this into three different parties, right, when we're talking about it. So you've got the merchant, which we mentioned. You've got the software provider or the point of sale provider, right, who is, we would call, a SaaS company. And then you've got the payment processor, right? Those are the three parties we're talking about. If I'm a merchant, we already discussed a little bit what the driver was, but my life is getting much more efficient. You know, if I was working with my bank and a SaaS player and then one or two or three other providers, I can consolidate vendor relationships as an example. And, you know, it might also be that my existing relationship, let's say with a bank, I'm not getting the service levels I feel I deserve. Because, you know, well, guess what? There are full service banks out there where the bank is focusing on this multi-product relationship. So, you know, I'm going to lend them, do treasury, FX, etc. But what is a small business? They just need a business account. And so to service all of them with that high touch relationship is very difficult. Hence, sometimes they get forgotten. And so if I'm that merchant, I want that high touch relationship and also the ability to simplify my life. And all of that together is going to save them time and money. If I'm the software platform, right, I was naturally out of the revenue stream. I was naturally out of the flow of funds, right? So because the bank was the one doing the payments and they were the one with the integration. And so what I get is the ability to tap into that revenue stream. And clearly what I mentioned before is they're providing this superior experience for the merchants. And they get to monetize on some of the spend that they've been doing to go out and win some of these merchants, whether that's marketing dollars, Salesforce, et cetera. So it's pretty clear incentives for the platforms. For the payment processing companies, right, they get scale benefits. So they don't have to invest in that Salesforce to go out and sell every single small business. But what they do get exposure to is the growth rate. However, it's slightly less because the software platform, because they're doing all of that stuff, they control the unit economics to an extent, right? So over time, they can slightly negotiate down the revenue shares that they're splitting with the payment processor. However, from a margin or an EBITDA level basis, I don't think the payment processor really minds. And so that's why we think, you know, it is very beneficial to be the payment processor, and it doesn't really hit your margins too much, right? In fact, all you have to do is sell the software platform once, and you get the benefit of the platform selling the merchants many times over.
Interesting. So it's kind of a win-win, except probably for the banks.
Yeah, that's it.
All right. So tell us, what sort of time do you expect this adoption rate that you mentioned to increase? Because if US is to be taken as an example, there should be a lot of upside for Europe, right?
Totally. It's a great question. So yeah, on the numbers, we're talking about 24% of volume going up to 35% of volume in 2028. And you know, the way we've thought about the cadence, and we've done a number of conversations across the ecosystem, operators, consultants, experts, and I think agreeing on an exact number isn't easy, right? So one of the things that we lean on is thinking through the cadence with which we estimate the US penetration has increased over time, and take a bit of a haircut to that, if you will. And so we go back, say, 5 years and think about the increase in penetration from, say, 2016 to 2021 or 2018 to 2023, and then take a haircut to that. So if we say that the US penetration over the last 5 years increased 14%, we've got an 11-point increase. But I think the point you're making is right, because we're at the early stages of the adoption curve, right? I mean, again, I mentioned that 2016 level of penetration we estimate for the US, 45%, is still above our 2028 estimate, implying a greater than 12-year delta. So I think we're applying a degree of conservatism to our estimates for all the reasons I mentioned around fragmentation. But the way I'd like to frame it is there is certainly upside to this number. And I think when you go through, like, there's a lot of players out there doing surveys. I won't name them here, but when you think about the number of respondents usually that are willing to adopt software-led payments or work with their software provider to embed payments in their operations, those numbers can go well, well above 35%.
Fantastic. Justin, this has been extremely fruitful. Thank you so much. So let me quickly summarize what I took away from this conversation. Number one, there's a strong value proposition for all parties involved in the payment ecosystem. Integration of payments allow almost everyone to expand their customer reach and scale their businesses. So this should continue to incentivize adoption rate. Secondly, Justin's bottom-up model suggests software-led payments volume in Europe is likely to grow at an 18% annual rate for the next 5 years. Now, that is 1.5 to 2 times faster than European card payments and 3 to 4 times more than all other distribution channels. So that's a solid growth number there. And lastly, even with the strong growth, penetration of software-led payments in Europe will rise from current 24% to only 35% by 2028. And I say only as this number is still significantly below that of the US, where Justin forecasts over 80% penetration. So the 35% penetration might as well be quite conservative after all, right? So that's it from us today. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. I think Justin did a fantastic job simplifying what is a relatively complex topic. You will find more such insightful audios in our Global Research Pod Hub channel. Until next time, this is me, Sambuddha Ray, signing off for now.
This content has been prepared by UBS AG, its subsidiaries, and/or affiliates, and is purely informational in nature. It is not investment research and does not contain an investment recommendation nor investment or professional advice. It is not an offer or solicitation to engage in any investment activity, and you should seek your own financial, tax, and legal advice before engaging in any such activity. UBS has no responsibility to you in relation to this content. It has no regard to your personal circumstances or investment objectives, and receiving it does not imply any form of client relationship with UBS for any legal, regulatory, or tax purpose. This content is not intended for distribution into any jurisdiction where to do so would be contrary to law or regulation. UBS does not accept any liability over the content of such material or reliance upon any information contained herein. The views and opinions expressed by any guest speaker or third party are not those of UBS. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over any such views and opinions expressed by such persons. This content is the valuable intellectual property of UBS, and UBS specifically prohibits the redistribution of it in whole or in part without its prior written permission. UBS 2024, the key symbol and UBS are among the registered and unregistered trademarks of UBS. All rights reserved.